Hi there, it's Roger Dougherty, SQL Server Technical Evangelist, and this is the second presentation in a series on SQL Azure. The first presentation was Introduction to SQL Azure, and this presentation is entitled Advanced SQL Azure Database. We're going to cover all of the extended capabilities offered by some of the new services that are coming online on a regular basis. And hopefully some of the things that you see here will get you excited about building solutions to target the Windows Azure platform. So let's get started. So, as we roll out the Windows Azure platform and as we roll out SQL Azure on that platform, we're learning faster and faster how to improve our engineering efficiencies for targeting the cloud, and how to improve our operational efficiencies for targeting the cloud. And this allows us to innovate almost on a quarterly basis. So every quarter, you're going to see improved capabilities available, not only in SQL Azure, but in some of the additional services around SQL Azure for building solutions. So some of the services that I'd like to kind of drill down on and talk about in this presentation include the ones that you see listed here. I think we have a separate presentation that really targets the Windows Azure Marketplace, but it's important to note that the whole process of buying and selling finished data sets and including integration with them with your application is a great business opportunity and something that can really improve the productivity of your development teams. So that's something to definitely check out. The three core services that we'll focus on in this presentation include SQL Azure Reporting, which allows you to visualize your data, SQL Azure Data Sync, which helps you to synchronize your data amongst multiple nodes. And finally, SQL Azure Federations, which assists you with scale-out requirements and elastic scale associated with cloud-based application development. So with these services and all the capabilities that they bring to bear, we're really looking at some great developer opportunities to build a variety of different types of categories of applications, including applications that target devices that are connected to continuously available services, as well as consumer apps and software as a service line of business offerings as well. All of these things are a good fit for the Windows Azure platform and for SQL Azure. So let's drill down a little bit on SQL Azure Reporting. What is this thing? It's really SQL Server Reporting services delivered as a service on the Windows Azure platform. The one primary kind of scenario that we're targeting initially with SQL Azure Reporting is what we would call operational reporting. And this is essentially the ability for a developer to create a pre-designed report and embed it within an existing web application to visualize data in very compelling ways. So the actual service infrastructure for SQL Azure Reporting shares a lot of the same common characteristics that you would expect for example, SQL Azure Database brings to bear. And that would include things like high availability. If your report server web service falls over, we will spin up another one and get you connected in a very rapid time frame, minimizing downtime. It can also be used to scale out elastically. The nodes that run the report server are only going to support a certain amount of report rendering traffic. And if you see your demand for rendering those reports spike, you can always provision additional report server web services, deploy your reports to those, and then kind of load balance across them from your application to help handle some of those peak load scenarios. So the nice thing about SQL Azure Reporting is that it lets you get started very, very quickly. You provision your report server via the Windows Azure Management Portal. Then you design your reports using the Visual Studio Report Designer. And then you deploy your reports to the report server, either through your development tool or interactively using the Windows Azure Management Portal. Finally, once your reports are deployed, you can render those reports from an existing ASP.NET web application or other applications that embed the Visual Studio 2010 report viewer control. So here's a sample one that you can see here. So in terms of a lot of the basic capabilities in reporting services, the key thing to note is that if you're already familiar with reporting services, you're going to be working in familiar territory. It's the same Visual Studio report designer you use to build reports for reporting services. Underlying format for the reports themselves are based upon RDL, or the report definition language schema. Essentially that same report design format is used for both on-premise and cloud reporting. It supports all the same types of report items and data visualizations for building nice, rich, interactive reports. And the way the web service works is essentially the same, and the way that you do URL access to reports themselves is essentially the same. And finally, the way that you embed that functionality into your application is also with the Visual Studio Report Viewer Control, as we mentioned. So all of this stuff is a familiar territory if you're already a reporting services developer. If you're not, it's very easy to get up and running on these technologies. In terms of the security aspects of reporting services, there's a few things to consider. We only support SQL authentication with SQL Azure reporting, so you have to provision user accounts and privileges that are unique to a report server. We don't support integrated authentication at this time, and the admin user is automatically provisioned during the service provisioning process. So you basically give it a name and provide the password, and you can then change that password later if you need. That administrator user has complete rights to everything that happens on the server. So you don't really want to use that to connect up to your report server from the application layer. Really, you should be provisioning users that your application, or user identities that your application uses to authenticate to actually render reports. So you provision those users, you add them to the right roles, and you can even go down to the item level for folders in your report hierarchy or individual reports themselves and grant item level permissions on those. So there's a few differences with SQL Azure reporting in comparison to reporting services. First of all, the biggest difference, this is common with SQL Azure Database, is that the focus here is on logical, not physical administration. So really you're just provisioning services in a simple operation. You're not rolling out hardware and purchasing database software and licensing that database software. We kind of handle all of that infrastructure for you behind the scenes. The other piece of this is that the back-end databases required for your report catalog are all kind of handled automatically as part of the provisioning process. You're completely isolated from that. You don't even have to deal with it. There is the portal experience for SQL Azure reporting is really designed more for administrators or for developers who are trying to configure the service. There is no kind of generic portal technology for SQL Azure reporting, similar to report manager with on-premise reporting services. So it's up to you as a developer to present the reports that you want your users to be able to see and to build your own access to those reports. SSL is required for connections to the service. And in the initial release, we only plan to support SQL Azure data sources. You won't be able to connect up a report running in SQL Azure reporting to an on-premise SQL Server database, for example. You would have to get your data up into the cloud first in order to do that. However, it's important to note that if you're running reporting services on-premise, it can target SQL Azure databases in the cloud. So that's a valid data source from a reporting services perspective. It's supported in the UI, and there's no problem doing that. Cool. So a few things to be aware of. We didn't turn everything on in SQL Azure reporting, and we didn't enable all the tools. So the end user ad hoc report builder tool does not yet support SQL Azure reporting. Some advanced features like subscriptions, scheduling of report execution and delivery, and caching are not enabled. It does not support report models for self-service ad hoc reporting. It does not support shared data sets or external images referenced from inside a report. So those are a few things to be aware of that are slightly different from the on-premise installation or implementation of reporting services. So let's switch over and do a demo. I'm going to connect up to a VM here I've got running. And this is the same kind of sample web application that you saw in the Introduction to SQL Azure Reporting presentation that does CRUD operations against a SQL Server database. So this application is running on-premise, and it has an operational report in it called a stocking level report. And so our web application just calls out to a report server web service that's deployed on-premise, renders that report, and provides it into the UI. So you get some nice data visualization there. And I get all the functionality of the Visual Studio Report Viewer control. So I can export this thing to different formats. I can save a copy of it locally if I like, if I'm a user of the app. All of that reporting services goodness is available through the Report Viewer control. The same capabilities are available in SQL Azure reporting. If I look at my development environment here, you can see I've got a cloud project that includes a report project that has basically the same identical report. A few differences in terms of the security here because we're using SQL authentication to connect up to the SQL Azure database. But other than that, the report is essentially identical. The way we've implemented the connectivity there is we first set up a data source, and that data source, points up to the SQL Azure database using a shared data source. And then based upon that data source, you basically develop a query that defines the data set that will be included inside the report. So if I look at that data set, it's just a simple SQL query against a view that's going to produce some result sets, which then I map into report items on my report to visualize the data. I can design that query graphically, or I can just go in here and code it up myself if I like. I think I wanted to also just mention quickly to point out here that if you look at this data source, we do support SQL Azure as one of the specific connection types here. So it's built right into the UI. My report's designed. I can preview it here in the report designer. It will connect up to the SQL Azure database to run the report. We should be all good here. Yep, it's running. So this is running against live SQL Azure data. To deploy this thing, I just right-click on my project, and I select Deploy. And you'll want to keep an eye on the output screen here for the deployment process. If you're doing something that isn't currently supported in reporting service, SQL Azure reporting, you'll get a warning. So notice here, since we're not using integrated security, I need to know a user account for the report server that has privileges for deploying reports. So I'm just going to use the admin user to do that. And if I typed my password correctly, we should be good. And here we're deploying this same report up to SQL Azure reporting the same way we would do to an on-premise installation of reporting services. So we're all good there. Our report has been deployed. So switching over, let's take a look at kind of how SQL Azure reporting is surfaced up in the cloud. So in your Windows Azure Management Portal, you just go into this new reporting option, and you'll be able to see the new SQL Azure Reporting portal experience that we've made available this week that was announced at the PaaS Summit. This is the way that you can interactively kind of manage, first of all, deploy or provision new report servers, and then manage those report servers. So here you can see I've got one that's already deployed. I've got some reports that have already been deployed here. The one that I just deployed from Visual Studio is located right here. So I can also go in and set permissions on all of these things and do everything I need to do to manage that report server web service. In a very familiar environment if you're already used to working with the Windows Azure Management Portal. So once my report's deployed, it should be accessible from my application. So let's go out here and take a look at the Windows Azure web role that I have deployed here that runs my ugly sample app. We'll spin that up, and hopefully my web app's been deployed. It looks like it's deployed. It's working fine. And it's the same application with the same embedded report, this time pointing at a SQL Azure database. So when I click on my link for my embedded report, it renders the report, and I get the same kind of behaviors and look and feel for that embedded report that I did for my on-premise installation of reporting services. You can, control some of these behaviors for the report viewer control using AJAX if you don't like some of the buttons or you want to rearrange them. It's fairly easy to customize those behaviors. But I can just take a copy of this report now and export it, save it to my hard drive, email it to somebody. I would challenge you as a web developer to code up a web page that has all of this rich functionality in such a short amount of time as you're able to do with SQL Azure Reporting. So it's a great development environment with a lot of interesting capabilities. So let's switch back to our deck, and let's proceed with the presentation. Oh, sorry, I'm fat fingering here a little bit. There we go. So that's all I've got to say really about SQL Azure Reporting in the limited time we have for this presentation. So let's move on to another really rich capability available on the Windows Azure platform to help you deal with your data requirements, and that is SQL Azure Data Sync. So SQL Azure Data Sync is a Microsoft synchronization framework technology delivered as a service on the Windows Azure platform. It's currently in CTP form, so you can go out and play with it and test it. We have a brand new portal experience that was deployed this week that was announced at the PaaS Summit. So I'd encourage you to go in and check it out. It's actually pretty cool and pretty easy to use. So you use SQL Azure Data Sync to schedule synchronization between data sets that are hosted both in SQL Azure or on-premise in SQL Server. And the way that we've implemented the service, the SQL Azure Data Sync itself, we've basically decided to do it as a hub and spoke kind of topology. So you need a SQL Azure database to function as your hub, and then you define the data that you want to synchronize, and then you add clients or spokes. And those clients can be either other SQL Azure databases or SQL Server databases running on-premise. Okay, the implication of this is that if you enable bidirectional replication or synchronization, when you change data, if you change it on the hub, it only takes one synchronization to make it out to each of the clients. If you change it on one of the clients, it takes one synchronization to move it up to the hub, and then a second synchronization to move it out to the rest of the clients. So that's the kind of way that this hub and spoke topology operates from a synchronization perspective. So some special considerations when using SQL Azure Data Sync. You should really think about these things. First of all, you configure a conflict resolution policy when you set up and configure your synchronization group. And there's basically two choices, either the hub wins or the client wins. So if the The data was updated since the last sync in two places. You have two choices for who's going to win out in that operation. The loser, we don't throw the data away. We'll move it over into a conflict detection table, and then you could write some custom application logic to go and pick that up and see if there's anything that needs to be done with it so to avoid data loss. But there is no ability currently to write your own custom conflict resolvers. We're trying to just make this simple for the first implementation. When you set up one of the clients, you define the direction that you want the synchronization to work. And you basically have three options: to hub, from hub, and bidirectional. So the to hub means that the client, say this Western Europe SQL Azure database, is kind of the master copy of the database, and we're going to maintain a read-only copy here on the hub and potentially distribute that read-only copy to the other clients. From hub means the master copy is on the hub itself. If you want to make changes to that, you have to make the changes at the hub, and read-only copies are maintained on the clients. And then finally, you have bidirectional, where you can make changes either at the hub or at any one of the clients. And when we do the synchronization operation, we'll do conflict detection and we'll implement that conflict resolution policy that we just chatted about. You can do synchronization on demand, or you can synchronize the sync operations and on a scheduled basis. Your options in terms of the schedule: the minimum amount of time between synchronization events is 5 minutes. We won't let you do it, less than that. And the maximum amount of time between synchronization events is 1 month. The definition for the data that gets synchronized is called a data set. And that data set includes a list of the various tables that you'd like to synchronize, the columns within those tables that you want included in the synchronization operation, and then it gives you the ability to kind of filter the row data as well, so you can kind of like partition your data out. So for example, I could have a row filter defined here that only sends the Western European data out here to this client in Western Europe. Once you set up that data set definition, you then start setting up your clients. Setting up SQL Azure clients is really easy. We deploy those agents automatically. For on-premise clients, you have to deploy that agent yourself and hook it up to your sync group using a special token that gets generated just for that particular installation of the agent. Talking a little bit about how to provision this stuff. Basically, you deploy your database first to the hub and to your clients. In the sample that I'll show you, I used the data tier application framework, and I created a backpack that included both my schema and data. I dropped that backpack into Windows Azure Blob Storage, and then I imported that backpack on both my hub and on my SQL Azure clients to provision the database. And I also deployed that same backpack to my on-premise SQL Server installation. So before I set everything up, I deployed the database everywhere to make sure the sync operations would work okay. After you deploy the initial database, you set up your schedule, you choose your conflict resolution policy, you define the data set that is included for synchronization, you install your agents up on the on-premise SQL Server instances and register them using keys, and then you deploy the topology. And the deployment process is like magic. I mean, it worked the first time I tried it. It seems quite robust and very intuitive. It was extremely easy to do it through the new portal experience. So I'd highly recommend that you play around with this. It's very easy to get started. So some considerations from an operational perspective. You can do syncs on a manual or scheduled basis. When you update data on the hub, it takes only one synchronization operation to get that out to all the clients. If you update data at the client, it's going to take two synchronization events for that to get out to all the clients because it's got to go to the hub first. And it's important to note that when you set up a SQL Azure Data Sync data articles, Sync Framework will automatically create triggers on the tables that are included in the data set. And those triggers may affect your application behavior. So you'll want to make sure to test your application to make sure that the additional triggers that get put on your tables don't cause some strange behavior, say, in your ORM layer. So let's take a look at SQL Azure Data Sync in action. So I'm hooked up here to my Windows Azure Management Portal. And we go down to Data Sync. And we can see an existing sync group that I've already deployed. So I've got my hub set up on a SQL Azure server that's running in North Central U.S. I've got a client in a SQL Azure server running in South Central U.S. And I've got another client running on-premise on a SQL Server installation on my server box. The state that's given me here is that everybody's, you know, the last time I did a synchronization operation, everybody was in good shape. And as far as data sync is concerned, all is well. You can see over here on the right some of the configuration options. For my conflict resolution policy, I have that the hub wins. I've defined my schedule to allow scheduled sync actions to happen once a month. So for demo purposes, that's probably fine, and you want to manually sync to show kind of how things are working. But I can take that all the way down to 5 minutes if I want. That's the smallest amount of time that I can create for my sync schedule. Once you also have to configure the sync data set. So here I've just included all of the tables in my little product catalog database. One thing that I ran into was the Sync framework was originally designed to work with a lot of different types of databases, so it kind of has an abstracted set of data types, so it might not support all the specialized data types that are available in SQL Server. As long as you're dealing with, you know, basically strings, numbers, and dates, you're probably in good shape. You start using fancy stuff like user-defined types or spatial types, Sync Framework's not going to understand how to deal with those. So in my case, I had user-defined types on some of my columns that I had to get rid of on this database before I could include it in the data set. Cool, so that's kind of a little bit about the definition. I set all this stuff up. I clicked Deploy, and SQL Azure Data Sync coordinated the installation of the agents and the initial synchronization amongst all the clients. I mean, it was really very seamless, and it worked the first time I tried it. I was quite impressed. And the UI is really nice as well. So let's see how this stuff works. If I go out here into Management Studio, what we can do here is let's connect up to our on-premise SQL Server database that's participating as a client. And I've got a couple of Transact SQL queries coded up here to do some things. So if I query my product category table on my on-premise installation of SQL Server, we see that there's, four different categories defined here. So let's just throw in another product category here called Roger On-Prem. Notice when I ran that insert statement, what happened? Triggers fired in the background, which caused some different application behavior. Some ORM layers are only expecting one of these messages to come back, right? If three of them come back, it can confuse some ORM layers. So that's all happening because of the sync framework triggers underneath. We did an insert. The trigger fires first. There was if it were an update, we would have seen one row here affected, but since it was just an insert, we only see one trigger row inserted, and then this is the actual insert to the base table. So be careful and make sure you test your applications to make sure that this trigger behavior doesn't mess with how you handle your and do your results processing. All right, cool. So I've done my insert now. Let's kick off a synchronization operation manually and push that out to the other clients. So when I initially do that, I'm just going to click on my sync group, and I'll go ahead and do sync now. And we can monitor the progress here kind of visually as the synchronization operation occurs. So what I expect to happen here is, because the data changed down here in my client, the first sync operation should move it up here to my hub, okay? But it will not be up here in my other SQL Azure client until the second sync operation occurs. So let's verify that that's indeed the case. We'll go back here, and we'll connect this thing up now to my hub and see if the row made it up to the hub. So here's my database on the hub, and I will open up my query again, connect up to SQL Azure that way, and let's go see what kind of data is in the hub now. So the hub has my new row, so it worked there. Now, if I connect up to my other SQL Azure client, I do not expect that row to have made it up there yet, because it has to make it to the hub first. So I'll open up my query again and connect it up to that other SQL Azure database. And when we query here, we don't expect to see a row there, and it's not there yet. So let's go back and do another manual sync operation and push that row out to the other SQL Azure client. So again, we get some nice kind of monitoring going on here of how things are going with the sync operation. You know, there's logs that you can view on the different activities that occurred that'll tell you whether or not conflicts were detected. So you can go in and clean up that conflict data from an app, you know, either in an automated way or manually. So everything's working correctly here. If I go back out now and I run that same query, notice my row did make it out now to my database. So we're in good shape. So that should give you a good feel for some of the capabilities that are available in SQL Azure Data Sync. So let's go ahead and jump back to the presentation. All right, so moving forward, let's talk about the final kind of advanced SQL Azure topic, and that's the whole topic of database sharding and scaling out your data to take advantage of some of the elastic scale capabilities that are available in the Windows Azure platform. So SQL Azure Federation really is a new kind of engine-level capability that's going to be deployed as part of SQL Azure Database that will give you integrated support for database sharding. And database sharding gives you the ability to kind of automatically provision new SQL Azure nodes to handle the workload and the data associated with a particular partition or subset of your data, and it does it kind of automatically. New shards can get created on the fly. You can manually split and merge your shards to help, you know, shrink and grow your scale out configuration based upon the kind of load and demand and pricing options that you and billing that you want to support. So one potential use of this is for multi-tenancy. So imagine, if you will, the ability to create a single logical database, and in that logical database I would create a federation based upon tenant. Okay, so that initial federation would give me the ability to, for example, for one of my nodes, host the data for two separate tenants on that same node. And I might charge them based upon the fact that they're sharing, you know, storage and CPU with other customers, right? For another tenant who, you know, maybe pays a little bit more, I might, deploy that tenant to their own node. Okay. Again, it's the same logical database structure here, but that tenant's data is kind of sharded out to its own independent node. On the high end, I might have yet another tenant who not only has its own node, but it has multiple nodes. So I'm actually taking that tenant's data and I'm sharding it on a second federation across multiple nodes. Maybe it's the retail season, Christmas is coming up, they currently have two nodes and they want four to handle all of their activity. That's a fairly easy thing to spin up, and then I could just, you know, if I'm a software as a service provider, you know, charge my customer some additional amount for those additional node usage capabilities that they're consuming. So from a billing perspective with SQL Azure, it's just all, we just kind of add up the amount of databases that you have as part of your entire sharded configuration, and you know we charge you on the data center egress. So split and merge operations are not included in that. So and we can do that very quickly and very efficiently inside the data center. So this should be quite an economical and attractive solution for scaling out your SQL Azure database solutions. So there's a few operational considerations that you should think about in using our initial implementation of federations. First of all, a logical database can contain multiple federations. So in the example I have here for the multi-tenancy, I might have one federation based upon tenant, and then another federation based upon date, for example, and that would give me the ability to shard an individual tenant on an additional layer. So the distribution schemes for the shards supports int, bigint, GUID, and var binary types. So that is the way that you define how to route data to a particular shard is using these distribution schemes. And those are the data types that you can use to define the underlying scheme. So the way this works in the application layer is you connect up to the federation root. So your connection string just points to that. Once you're there and you need to do some operations against data in a particular shard, you use this filtering capability to kind of route your connection to the correct shard. And that is something that you have to engineer for at the application tier. It doesn't happen transparently. So there are, you know, things that you have to design at the application layer to actually work correctly against a federated or sharded database in SQL Azure. So a few things that we're not addressing in this in the first release that's coming up probably sometime in 2012. One thing is that if you have deployed your shards already and you all of a sudden realize that you need to make a change or, say, add a column to a table, you would have to go and do that to each individual shard. We're not going to kind of, you know, deploy those types of schema changes in a distributed way for you. So, you know, be careful. Get your data structures right before you shard it all out. If you do need to make a change, you might want to consider merging your shards first to avoid having to go across and do that manually. If they're small enough, that shouldn't be a problem. The other thing that we're not doing in the first release is supporting any kind of, you know, kind of scatter, gather, fan out query type support. So, you know, the data is, you know, essentially stored in separate databases. You know, even though we kind of logically consider it one database, we don't support distributed fan-out queries across them. So if you need to include data that's stored in multiple shards, you'll have to go and get that data, bring it up into your application tier, combine it, and then send it back to the end user that way. We will look at supporting, you know, fan-out style queries in future releases. So what I'd like to do now is switch over and show you a quick demo of SQL Azure Federations. So what I'm going to do here, I'm connected up to the master database on my test server that's running the version of SQL Azure that has the CTP of Federations active on it. And the first thing I'm going to do is create a new database. Looks like I've lost my connection, so let me just connect back up to the server, make sure that I'm in good shape. So, looks like I'm in good shape now. So you have to obviously create databases in the master database. So, you know, this is just a normal SQL Azure database at this point. And what I can do is go change my context to that database and start thinking about how to do my sharding. So the first thing I need to do is define how I want to shard my data. And so I'm going to create this thing called a federation, and I'm going to base it upon a bigint. So the maximum number of shards would be, you know, the number of discrete values possible in a bigint, which is a very large exponential number. So you could potentially have, you know, unlimited scale-out capability with that. So I'll go ahead and create that federation. And nothing's really been done yet in terms of tables or that type of thing, so we're going to do that next. So your application is going to need to kind of switch context as it's working with sharded data. So the root, the federation root is where you go to kind of do things all up across all of your shards and to switch context to a different shard. So I'm going to go ahead and switch context back to that. And we'll go and take a look at kind of what's set up right now in that root the federation root database. So what we've got is basically a single federation with a single shard based upon customer ID. So SQL Azure, when I created that federation, it automatically went out and created a new SQL Azure database, which is called a federation member, to store all the possible customers, from the low range of a big int up to the maximum possible high range of a big int, okay? So that's kind of the effect of just creating the federation. Now, there's no tables or data in that federation yet or in that shard. So let's go ahead and go start doing some data definitions. So I'm going to switch context now to that shard that was just automatically provisioned by SQL Azure Federations. And now that I've switched context to that shard, I can go in and, say, create some tables or that type of thing, right? So if I look inside that shard, I can see kind of based upon the shard that I'm sitting in right now, the range of customers that are inside the shard that I'm in currently. So let's go ahead and switch to the shard, and let's create some tables. So I'll go ahead and create a customer table here, and the new syntax here is telling me that we're going to federate this based upon the federation that I defined earlier, customer ID, which is that big int. All right, and since I only have one shard, that table is really going to exist only in one database. And now that, remember, my context is still inside that shard. So if I insert data at this point, it's going to insert it in that shard whether it belongs there or not, right? So it's up to you at the application tier to switch the context to the correct shard if you need to do that. Right now we only have one shard, so we don't care. So we'll just insert a bunch of customers, and we've got, you know, customer IDs ranging from 56 all the way up to 210, right? So we go back to the root, change our context. So you know we're kind of starting at a clean slate here in terms of our connection routing. And then I tell at the application layer that I want to work with customer ID 100. So route me to the right federation that will allow me to work with customer ID 100, right? And once I'm in there, I can, you know, inside the shard, I can go and figure out the min and max customer ID values that are in that shard. Remember, we only have one shard, and so all of our customer data is currently located there. The low customer ID is 56, and the high customer ID is 210, right? So we'll reset our context again, and we're going to do an online split operation. So this is going to take our one shard and make two shards out of it. Everything to the left of customer ID 100 will go in one shard. Everything to the right of customer ID 100 will go into another shard. And it happens, you know, as an online operation very, very quickly. And that, you know, essentially provisioned a new SQL Azure database as part of that operation. So we reset our context. Always make sure that you're sending the context down from the application tier so you know whether you're working in the federation root or whether you're working in a particular shard. Okay, and if we rerun some of our queries here to check our metadata, we now see we have two shards. We have one that's everything to the left of 100 and one that's everything to the right of 100. Okay, so all the database provisioning, all the moving of data between those shards was all handled inside the data center by SQL Azure. Cool. So if I now want to go and route my connection to do some work against, let's say, customer ID 0, it will route me to the correct shard for where customer ID 0 might exist. Okay. And now we can go in and we can say, all right, that's that left shard that we just created. So we should have everything from, you know, the negative end of BigInt all the way up to 99 here. And that's exactly what I get. This shard now contains the low end of my customer ID range, which was 56, all the way up to the high end of my customer ID range, which is 99. If I switch my context to the other shard, let's comment this one out, and we'll move to this use statement, which will switch me to the right-hand shard. And I rerun the same query, we will see this time, because of, you know, connection routing, I am in the right-hand shard. Okay. Now, we're not going to prohibit you from inserting data that doesn't belong in that shard. So if you want to make sure that you're only seeing data that belongs in that shard, you'll want to make sure that you use that filtering syntax that you see here in the use statement. You would want to turn that on. Right now, I'm saying I want to see everything, whether it's right or wrong. Okay. So it's important to know that the sharding from an application tier perspective is not transparent. You need to engineer for this. You need to have your application switch your context to the correct shard. Do your inserts, updates, and deletes against that shard, right? Switch back to the federation root for tables that aren't sharded. Create those there. You may actually want to copy some of that table data into the individual shard so that you can improve the performance of join operations against it. And that's essentially how this works. So what's coming in the future is things like, you know, fan out query support, distribution of alter table commands across all your shards, so you can add a column and have SQL Azure kind of push that alter table statement out and make all the shards consistent. These are the kinds of things that you can look forward to in future implementations of this technology. So hopefully you've learned some things, some advanced capabilities of SQL Azure. We covered SQL Azure reporting. We covered which helps you visualize your data for operational reporting scenarios. We covered SQL Azure Data Sync, which makes it easy for you to synchronize data sets between SQL Azure databases and SQL Server databases. And finally, we covered kind of preview technology for SQL Azure Federations, which helps you achieve kind of transparent scale-out and elastic scale-out capabilities as part of your cloud-based database solution. Thanks a lot for all your attention. Have a great day.